Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out of pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters, May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do it. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
Mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Hi, I'm Ethan Suplee. Welcome to American Glutton. Outside of acting, my two favorite things to do are diet and eat. I have a very complicated relationship with food, and on this podcast, we're going to talk about all of it. Food as entertainment, food as sport, food as fuel. I'll talk to experts and the average person, just like you and me.
I hate to ask you to do anything, but if you're enjoying the show, please take a moment to like, subscribe, rate, review, all of the above on whatever app you're getting it from.
Leah V is an author and model. Out now is her book, Unashamed, Musings of a Fat Black Muslim. You can find her on Instagram at lvernon2000. Leah V, welcome to the American Glutton Podcast.
Thank you for having me. I'm so excited to see what we're going to talk about today.
I'm excited to talk to you about so many different things. We could talk about your book. We could talk about you being a hijab model. We could talk about body positivity. I think, like, for me personally, I'm interested in all that stuff. For me personally, the thing that resonates more than anything is body positivity, simply because I have none of it. And I've been very overweight and had less than I have now, but even having, like, achieved all of my fitness goals, I still find myself being very self-critical. So I'm super curious about that and wondering if that is something innate or that is something you work at. I mean, I'm interested in you, Leah.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, I mean, like, I have been up and down on my weight. I think I am the biggest I've been in a minute. But it was actually really funny. I actually lost a shit ton of weight when I was 17 through eating disorders. And it was a really bad time for me. Growing up as, like, a fat Black Muslim, you are already seen as, you know, all these things, unworthy, you know, all this stuff coming from not only the Muslim community, but just society, you know, in and of itself. So I always had body issues and stuff like that. And so when I lost a shit ton of weight, I thought that that was going to give me the confidence that I needed. And when I tell you, and I think only fat people who have lost a lot of weight understand this, body dysmorphia, but I was, I think, more self-conscious as a smaller person than I was as a bigger person. And I just thought it was going to magically go away and this confidence was going to magically happen. And I didn't find out until I was just so tired of the eating disorder activities. I was, like, in the middle of my marriage. And one day I was just like, what would happen if you were, like, okay with the body you had right now? Like, what would happen if we just, like, stopped? We unpeeled these layers of being unworthy and ugly at a small size or a big size. Like, what would happen if you just cut that shit out and you start to appreciate the body that you're in right now and how it looks and feels right now? And it was never just like an upward heel of like, oh my God, I'm so confident. It was definitely low lows and high highs. But I think once I started to kind of redirect my mindset into, like, the body positive movement and, like, how that thought process is, like, I can still live my best life right now. I think that that opened the world up for me and how I viewed my body. And so Although I will say that people look at me and they're like, oh, like she's so confident. She wears colors and, you know, she's a big girl doing her thing. I still have very low lows. We're like, you're fat. You ain't nothing. You're fat. You'll never get anywhere in life. I still have that. And I've accomplished a lot as a fat person, but it never goes away. It's always something in the back of your head. Like, am I worthy because of my body size?
And it takes effort. Like, I mean, I guess that's the thing. I've met people and not associating them with body size at all, but I've met people who are just confident people. And I've been jealous of that. Like, wow, that guy has a lot of confidence and I don't have a lot of confidence. And I bet life would be better if I did, because if you're confident, you're just perceiving things as going your way and good. Like, that's a nice perception to have. And so when I try to do it, I always feel a little bit like a phony at first, but then I can find stuff about myself that I don't despise so much. And then I try to build on that. Like, I find one body part that I don't think is repulsive. And I go like, okay, well, if that's not repulsive, what else is not repulsive? Maybe, you know, what am I capable of and all of that? But I am impressed by people who have confidence. And I think that it's, you know, like I don't see much beneficial from people walking around feeling ashamed. I don't think societally we get anywhere doing that.
That is super deep. And so, like, to loop back around, because I like to go off tangents, to like, is confidence innate or something that you learn? And I do feel that, I will say, because I'm a Leo, I believe in astrology. Okay. And I think Leos are very much so, very like, look at me, like it's all about me, like drama and like an experience. And so I will say I've always had that. And that goes to your point where it's like, okay, you feel like a phony. I definitely have had those moments, but I've learned to be a good actress.
Yeah.
And to understand that when I walk into a room, if my head was down and my shoulders were slumped and I was wearing black, you know, I would be seen as the stereotypical fatty. But now when I walk into a room, I learn that confidence oozes off of you. And I think that I still feel like a phony in a way, but I've taken people that I think are very, very confident and kind of embodied what that looks like, not only externally, but internally. So I really love like Cher, right? Cher doesn't give a damn about what anybody got to say. Like you interviews, outfits, never gave a damn. Never will give a damn. She was dating a guy 30 years younger than her. She's like, okay, and I'm Cher and I'm doing it. And so I look at Cher's life and how she wore what she wanted to wear and sung how she wanted to sing and loved who she wanted to love. And I embody those things. Like, what would Cher do? Like, you know, how would she flip that hair? Like, you know, would she just be like in an interview talking shit? Like, what would she do? And I take like, these icons, not just like celebrity icons, but regular people that I feel like are confident. And I look at how they move, how they talk, how they enter a room. And I think that that's helped me kind of embody that into my own Leah V type of confidence. And so when I do walk into a room, I might not feel confident, but people and strangers have literally stopped and turned like, who is she? What's happening? And so I was able to embody that. And I think that is definitely innate, but I do think it can be learned as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Something you said earlier, which was you lost all the weight. You expected this change to happen. I've done it so many times. I mean, in the past 20 years, I've lost 100 pounds or more, four or five times. Wow. And that was always kind of the goal I was waiting for. I was waiting for all my psychological baggage to go away because I attributed it all to my weight. And the mystery that I've finally solved is that my weight is not going to make any of that go away. You know, I do feel better having set a goal and achieved a goal like that. I can say like, good. Yes, I feel good about that, but it hasn't made me just happy. You know, I'm not walking around every day going, well, I'm just happy now. I don't have to worry about anything else. That doesn't happen. But I think that this is probably a common misconception that a lot of people deal with where they think that life is going to change in some really dramatic way. And then it just really doesn't.
Yeah.
You know?
So I will say, because like the world is fat phobic, that's a given. You know, if I go to the doctor's office for, I don't know, a limb falling off, they're like, you think it's because you're fat? Like, so I will say that is 100% true. But on the other aspect, on the other end, the world does kind of change a little bit for you, not necessarily internally, like with a, oh, like I'm confident now, or like, oh, I have a you know, some baggage that I need to get some therapy for or have a support system for. But there are like external things that happen when you get thin. Like we see it with celebrities, like especially focus on the women celebrities. They will sit there and hype up and be like, oh, this celebrity lost like 80 pounds, like, you know, da da da. Now she's so svelte and now she's this. And before, when she was like bigger or thicker, they're taking like unflattering angles of them, or they're just making like jokes and stuff about what they're wearing. So I will say internally, definitely there is probably not so much change that we expect. But externally, I think life does get better because the society is fat phobic. So life does get better for people when they lose a shit ton of weight. Like it is like the world opens up for you, like jobs and dating even. Like, you know, my dating pool is like shrinks because nobody wants to see, you know, be seen with a fat girl. Like, and so, and I've had guys say stuff or try to date me on the low low because their friends are going to make fun of them because they're with somebody who's bigger. So it's a mind fuck. Oops, sorry, I don't have the glass.
No, you can say anything you want.
Okay, because yeah. I'm gonna have a sailor mouth. But yeah, it's a mind fuck because it's like, damn, like I am trying to do good like inside my body and trying to like, you know, stay, have confidence and build the confidence and dress nice and speak nice and do all the right things. But then someone will come in your face and like, hey, no, because you're fat. And I'm like, what? Like, wow. That's crazy to me. I'll never be able to get over that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, for me, I definitely had a rough time as a kid, but I think that my experience is different simply because I was married, or we weren't married, but I was with a girl who I'm still with. We're now grandparents. When I really started to try to change my life around, I'm also an addict. Like I have a lot that I have to work on with myself. I'm sober. I'm constantly working, doing self-work, right? And self-care and stuff like that. I lost weight a number of times and I've kept it off for 5 years. I'm not interested in the dating pool. Like I don't walk out my door. That's no longer like when I was 18, this would have been a major factor. I would have been paying attention. Like how are girls treating me different? I don't see any of that. And as an actor, I established myself as a big guy, so it actually was hard for a while to find work in a smaller body. So I had like almost the opposite societal reaction. I have people coming up to me going, you were much funnier when you were bigger and we loved you more when you were big. Yeah, like I have truly the opposite experience, but the stuff that I feel when I'm down on myself, I'm down on myself just as much, and I have to work my way out of it. And like I see people like you who are exuding confidence, like you said, it's infectious, and I want some of it. Like I go, like she's got it, she's got the secret. I wanna harness that or figure it out somehow, because I just think that even if I am doing it fake, you know, you can sometimes force yourself to laugh and find yourself laughing eventually. You know, it's one of these things of fake it till you make it. I believe that. I believe that if we practice something, even if we don't feel that it's legitimate, eventually it will become legitimate if it's a part of our behavior.
Yeah, I 100% agree. I do believe it. And I think also having people around you that kind of like harness that type of energy, because a lot of my friends, you know, it's funny how I'm 30, I'm about to be 36 next month. And, you know, I've lived a lot of life. I've done a lot of things. And so in a fat body, you know, I've done more things in a fat body than I have in a thinner body, you know? And so the people that I had around me when I was like fat and younger were absolutely horrific. Like they would, I remember one of my thin frenemies saying, cause you know, I used to try to wear color and she was like, well, I don't know why you fat girls always want to be seen. You know, I don't understand why you guys want to always wear color. And I'm like, you know, now I'm a sassy, you know, like big mouth Black woman. But before, I didn't know how to respond to that because I'm just like, why is it an issue when I'm confident? And so now I have a community of people of like queer people and thin people and like other fats who are just like, yes, you are the female, you are the Muslim Beyonce. So like I have people around me who are like, when I'm just like, oh, I'm ugly, or oh, like I don't feel like beautiful today, or I don't feel confident today in my own skin, they're like, absolutely not. Let's rewind it. Let's bring it back to the things you've done, the things that people haven't seen that you've worked towards. And I think having a cheering section has helped me. But I will say that everyone doesn't have a cheering section or is not blessed to have a cheering section. So what do you do if you're not confident? And I always tell people, you have to be your own fucking cheering section at the end of the day. Because if you don't have a support system like me or maybe like you and have a wonderful family and friends, like you have to be your own cheering section, because not everybody's going to be like, yay, you. You look good in your body. You feel great in your body. Like, you know what I mean? So it definitely comes to like the work that people are doing internally when other people don't see it. Cause that's honestly going to make the most difference. Like, yeah, walk into a room with your makeup on and a fantastic dress. Okay, cool. But what about those days when you're in the kitchen making breakfast and you're just like, I hate everything about myself. Like, yeah. What is going to happen then? Who's going to be cheering for you then? So it's super internal stuff that you have to constantly be aware of and constantly remind yourself. Like you said before, pick a part of your body that's okay. This is great. We're going to focus on that today, not the rest of the ugliness. And that it, you keep doing it. It becomes, you flex that muscle, you work that muscle.
Yeah. I think that this is one of the, and I've had this conversation with my kids and it gets tricky to talk about because maybe I just don't have the language because I'm not a psychologist and I don't know all the descriptions of the way the mind works and the brain and all of that. But like, I do think of this idea that like our thoughts are truth or our thoughts are real. And then I think, no, that's garbage, because if I work hard at it, I can think of something else, you know? And so I've even written down, like, I find a thought that is going to make me happy no matter what, or has some sense of joy surrounding it, like the birth of one of my children. And I write that down. Think of this day. I write the time, the date. Think of this day. And when I'm down, if I look at that, I'm forced to think of it, right? And I've now thought of something else. And it's almost like this battle of two Goliaths in my head of like the dark thought and the light thought duking it out. And which one's going to win? And am I going to be dark that day and sad? Or am I going to be like positive and upbeat? Mm-hmm. And like, I don't always win, but I do know it's possible to change the way you feel, because I've done it. You know, it's not super easy all the time, but I've done it. And I think when you talk about having external pressures on that, like a cheering section and having to be your own cheering section, like I would not be sober today if I didn't have a group of sober people that I fell back on when I was having difficulty. And I guess I used my family in that way for weight loss and stuff like that. But I think you can clobber that together. And if you can't, if you are an island or on an island alone and you have to do it yourself, you got to figure out some way to do it or just be resigned to misery.
Yeah. Like that's literally, it's just like, I think people sometimes are always wanting the answer. And a lot of times the answer is right in front of you or inside of you. Right. People ask me questions all the time that, you know, they're like, oh, you've done this stuff. And so, you know, give me the answer, the direct answer to this problem. And I'm like, honestly, it's going to take you. And a lot of people are not ready for that conversation. They want to constantly, you know, figure out like, okay, what's the easy way to do this? Like, you know, with weight loss, there's no, even if you have weight loss surgery, you still have to lose a little bit of weight before that. Yeah. You still have to maintain that body. With the BBL, you got to maintain that BBL. Like you got to maintain whatever you just did to your body, whether it's natural or surgery. You have to put in the work. And so there's
I don't know what BBL is. What's
BBL? It's a Brazilian butt lift. So everyone's getting the BBL now. Everyone's
the Kardashian look.
Yes, everyone wants the butt. You have to maintain that BBL. You can't just get a butt and then be like, oh, hey, I have a butt now. Like, no, it has to be maintained. And everybody wants the quick way to things. And it's just like, no, it could take you a year, 2 years, 3 years, maybe. There's no secret answer to anything in the world, honestly. And yeah. so, but a lot of times those answers are within you. You know the answer. You're just trying to ask all these questions so that you can kind of, you know, get the easy route to something. It doesn't, life doesn't work that way.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that the actual work, I think under any circumstances, life requires work. It requires effort. Like, I feel very apathetic sometimes, and that's where I get in trouble. Like days where I don't want to get out of bed. That's like as dangerous as my life really gets. And obviously I've driven a car, and you know, America's not the safest place maybe on earth, but where's safe? But for me, it's apathy and like getting sucked into my phone and like just avoiding hard work, which is what I find, is the best I feel is when I do something difficult. Mm-hmm. That always feels good to me. What were the, you said growing up Muslim had further compounded this. How did that work? Because I also don't know a lot about Islam and culturally what that's like for kids, yeah. Especially.
Yeah, I mean, it's so many layers to it. And I feel like a lot of like, so I'm an African-American Muslim. You have your African Muslims, you have your white converts, and you have like your European Muslims. So there's so many different types of Muslims. But I will say when it comes to like organized religion, that people just don't feel comfortable speaking to outsiders. So a lot of people don't necessarily know how a lot of the complexities and layers in Islam works because we don't feel comfortable talking about it. I am an artist and a writer and a model. So I, you know, feel comfortable talking to different people about my perspective. And so, yeah, growing up Muslim and being plus size and figuring out the woman versus the man role in society and religion in the household, it really messed with me, you know? I am still very much so, you know, Muslim. I had to find it for myself and not what how other people put it on me, like, oh, you should be Muslim because of this. Like, no, I'm Muslim because I want to be, and I'm the kind of Muslim that I want to be. I go by my own rules. And so, yeah, growing up Muslim, it just was, and then also being fat, you know, and then having to cover your body and then wear hijab. It was definitely a lot of just, I didn't feel confident. You know, I grew up in a Muslim home, but everybody else outside didn't know what a Muslim was, or, you know, looked at us funny, made fun of us, or just didn't get it. So I felt very much so always out like an outcast. And I think that's why I'm an artist and a writer now and a storyteller now, is because when I felt like I was being outcast and no one got me and I didn't get myself, I delve into books and stories. And I think that's why my imagination is so ridiculous now, because I would pretend to be other characters, you know, to get away from my mentally ill mom, to get away from, you know, my father not being there when he was there, fat shaming me and shaming me about my hijab, to get away from the kids who would make fun of me on the block because I wore a hijab. And so I would create these characters and scenarios to buffer myself, you know, to truly live. And it was funny because one of the characters that I used to pretend that I was Alicia Silverstone from Clueless. She was just like everything to me. And I just always would pretend that I would be in her position. And so that character got me through a lot. So
I like that character because she had confidence. She was a cool girl, but she was also really nice.
Yes. I like her.
Yeah, I kept waiting for the other shoe to drop and her to be more like the Mean Girls in the Mean Girls movie or Heathers or something like that. But she was nice. That was a nice character.
Yeah. And I wanted to be her so bad. Now that I'm older and, you know, I see how problematic that is because she was a thin white girl, right? With a rich daddy. I had none of those things. And so now it's just like, now I'm older. Like I want to be that role model for another girl who looks like me or similar to me, where it's like, okay, we look like each other. And now you have an actual true representation of somebody who, you know, can be fun and cool and sexy and be the main character, you know? So things are changing in that way where I think other people can like find people who look similar to them or been through the same thing as them and see them as like, okay, this is my hope, you know?
Yeah. 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 I think that's necessary. And I think that, you know, I will say culturally, I do think it's becoming less and less acceptable to make fun of fat people. And I see more and more little girls wearing revealing outfits or like confident in a bathing suit, where I never took my shirt off at the beach as a kid. You know, like that was my reality. As a kid, it was like, you know, this 40 plus years ago, but I felt such a deep sense of shame about my body. And I do see more kids who are overweight who don't have that shame. And it's a relief for me when I see that, because it's just not worth it, you know, like.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
It's just, I just don't think it's worth it. It doesn't benefit anyone because we had the shame and a lot of people got fatter. So what did it do? It didn't solve the problem, you know?
They did. They definitely did. And it's funny you use that word shame because like that's like a key word for me, not shame, but unashamed, right?
Yes.
And that's why like my memoir is Unashamed, Musings of a Fat Black Muslim, because like I think that word is so prevalent to a lot of people who share the marginalized identities, like of being fat, of being African-American, of being, queer or whatever the case may be, or, not able-bodied. Like, it's just this shame that surrounds a lot of these topics conversations. And I always tell people are like, oh, well, how can I be an ally for people like you or people who share your identities? And I always tell them, like, it's the ones who look the opposite who have the most power. So if I'm in a room screaming like, yes, body positivity, this, they're like, oh, shut up, you fatty. But if a thin woman who's preferably a white woman screams it, then it's like, oh my God, let's listen to this. And so you now have the privilege and power to stick up for people who are below you. That's just how it works. Like I have privilege as well. Like I'm on the lighter end of being Black. I'm educated. I have 2 masters. I'm shaped like bottom heavy. So versus someone who's apple shaped or bigger on the top and smaller on the bottom, I have privileges too. So now I have to take those privileges and uplift the ones who are below me. And so I think it just comes to that's what being an ally is truly helping people passing the mic who don't necessarily have a voice. And so I think it's very crucial, you know, that we talk about shame and allyship and worth and things of that nature, because like those are very key words.
Yeah. That's what your book's about, Unashamed? It's like a guide to your experience?
I would say it's more of a memoir.
Okay.
There are books out there that are like, oh, guide to being confident or guide to not being fat phobic. But mine was literally, I was very in a dark place in my life. I had went through a very messy divorce where I was left with nothing. And I had to reinvent myself. You know, I had the education, I had these things, but I didn't have money. He left me with nothing, no home, nothing, just clothes on my back. And I was in pain, you know, I was hurting and I was tired of like Muslim people. I was tired of white people. I was tired of skinny people. I was just tired of my mother. And like, I was tired of everybody. And I'm like, okay, so you can sit here in your misery or you can like let it out. And I always tell people I vomited on the page, like just all the stories about people who affected me and how I was affected by these people. As someone who's constantly silenced in the media, I wanted to tell my story on my terms. And so, yeah, I wrote a story about how what happened from birth up until me becoming a social media influencer and kind of a little bit blowing up from that. And so it's a journey of, you know, learning how to not carry that shame through all these decades, you know, and carry like the issues of my grandma and my mother and my ex and the community and society, and basically how to bloom and how to light that flame that's already inside each of us. So it's definitely, it's a tearjerker. And it shows you like just the life of somebody who you just maybe never experienced, you know, of a fat Black Muslim. Like, how many people get insights on the life of somebody who looks like me? It's not many.
Yeah, so. No, it's not. You know, I feel like I look at you and not knowing any of that, I'm just like, you have that confidence where I'm like, I want some of that. How do I get some of that? And then, it is honestly a bit of a relief to hear that it's not innate, because if it's not innate, then that gives me hope that I can find some, you know what I mean? And I do believe that these things can be contagious. And so your confidence can bleed into me a little bit, and then, you know, I'll feel like a phony for a long time, and maybe I'll have some confidence and that could bleed into somebody. But I do think it is contagious in that way. And I do think that it is important for, you know, just because the alternative is we're doing nothing and we're miserable, why not be happy?
That's true. I definitely agree. And it's crazy because you might think that way about yourself, but there are probably hundreds, if not thousands, of people who look at you or listen to your podcast or look at what you've done and be like, wow, I want to be like that guy. You know what I mean? I think it's just like, especially because like I'm an influencer. I'm trying to get away from that. Anyway.
You're an author, Leah.
I'm going to start leading with that. But like as a, you know, an all creator. I think people like I might be feeling like absolute crap. And I get this letter from this white grandma in Wisconsin who's like, oh my God, yes, fat Black and Muslim, like, you give me, you know, the fire to do what I got to do with my life, and I love it, and I wear colors now, and just like I get these messages and stuff like that. And I don't necessarily feel like maybe men get the same amount of like messages. So I do want to say that I feel like women are more like, yes, do your thing, we love it, this is how you affect us. And I feel like sometimes for men, they don't get that same like, oh, that's a really nice shirt. Or, oh, you look handsome today. Or, oh, you smell really good. So I feel like sometimes it could be that, like, maybe, you know, you probably do affect people in the way, but you just don't know it. And I think that also like helps build confidence, like, because somebody's looking at you and like, I want that. Like, I want his family, or I want him losing 100 pounds, or I want this, that he has a podcast. So I feel like we also need to, you know, understand that we are somebody's role model, you know?
Yes. No, you are absolutely right. And I did do something hard, and I know that that can be inspirational. Totally. I guess mostly it's that I failed so many times because I was looking for something to occur that wasn't occurring. And I think that thing just has to be worked on separately. I think it's a completely different thing. I think it's really more what you're talking about. Which I thought would just happen, you know, like when I lost a certain number of pounds, I just was waiting for it, like a click, like I'm going to be a different person. And I was the same person, and I was uncomfortable with myself. And then I even once got much thinner than I am now, like unhealthy thin, not quite unhealthy, but like so thin that I had like an existential crisis almost with like, I actually didn't like being that small. I felt like it just didn't feel right to me. And so I had to start lifting weights. Like it was this, it's just been crazy to try to feel like, and I hate this word normal, but yeah, to try to feel normal, you know? Hmm. And I suppose that's why so many people take pills, is just looking for some sense of normalcy. What the fuck is normal? Who's normal? Everybody's unique. So there's no normal. You know, it's like a crazy thing to try to hunt for.
It is a crazy thing. And I think like once you start also being around a bunch of like, honestly, I would tell people this, queer people have saved my life. So a lot of people think that I'm queer and I you know, it's everything's on a spectrum, of course. Everybody's a little gay to me. And I think honestly, queer people have saved my life because they just don't give a damn. They're like, we're going to be out here with the rainbows and like lollipops and just running and being themselves unapologetically. And I think I've gotten a lot of confidence from also learning how like queer people move, and they've inducted me into their lifestyle, into their lives, into their homes, and have taught me a lot about just finding that internal thing that makes you happy and true to yourself at the same time. And I think a lot of people, there's a lot of like political stuff, I'm not gonna get into that, but a lot of stuff happening where it's like they're trying to be blocked from living in their truths, when us normal folk could take and use a thing or two about living in your truth and living how you want to live and being okay with that. And kind of squashing that normal, quote unquote, normal thing. Cause like, you're right. What is that? It's a construct. And I think when people see queer people are so angry, it's because they're projecting, like, I want to live in my truth and I can't, whatever that truth is. And so I always give them all the flowers because they've helped my cishead ass to live in my truth and to be unapologetic about it. And so I always tell people, like, you know, you will be a lot happier if you lived in your truth, whatever that is, as long as it's not like harmful to other people. Now that's a different thing, but like living your truth is something that is the most freeing thing. And I wish that upon everybody on this planet is to live truly how they want to live.
Yeah, I've always felt very strongly that the only thing I could be sure of, and I say that not an absolute term, because I'm constantly learning new things and my point of view and perspective is changing all the time. But the only thing that I could be really sure of is my own understanding of stuff. I can't ever assume anyone is perfectly lined up with the way I see the world. And so I will try very hard to enter into another perspective, but I even do that going like, I'm trying to see their perspective through my perspective. So it's never going to be perfect, but I'm going to give that person the right to have a different idea about things, a different viewpoint. It became most apparent to me as a father, because, you know, you call kids, I call them my kids, they're my kids, but they're also human beings. And so I had early on these ideas about the way they should be. Mm. And you know, this isn't some broad thing where I had to struggle with something really huge that some parents have to go through, but even down to like what I think they should major in college, where they have a different idea of what they want to do. And like, at some point I had to go like, well, wait a second. I helped create these kids, but they're also just people. They have nothing. They're just other people too. And they have to have that right to their own reality, their own perspective. And that frees me up, because I'm with you, man. I really just think that, you know, holding on to some sense of like everything has to be a certain way, that doesn't make sense to me, because nothing really has to be any way at all.
Mm-hmm. Which is like such a, like, I think as you get older, you understand that you know nothing at all. It's like this very weird, like, okay, you're a teenager. You're like, I have all the answers. Like, and then you get in your 20s. You're like, I have all the answers. And then you get into 30s and like 40s. And you're like, I don't know anything at all. And it's just like, is everything real? Is everything true? And then you really start to question like the norms and the societal, like how things should roll. Like it's very interesting. And I think when it comes to like body stuff, and it's just like how the media tries to control how people should look, and they really, really focus on women. Like it is, I mean, it's out there. Like people can like look it up. I'm not just like making that fact up, but like the media focuses on women and their insecurities. And that's how we get these unrealistic beauty and body standards. And now we have men out here saying that they're also being targeted about like on their insecurities and how their body should look like. And a lot of men don't feel comfortable like saying it, because, you know, like, oh, emotions are for girls. Like, but we're all just being targeted through our insecurities through the media. And it's just like, they just will not stop. Like, it's really wild because, like, I'm behind the scenes. I've worked with all the larger corporations, and I've been New York Fashion Week in London, all that stuff. And it's wild how we have more information, but we've gone 10 years back. Like, when it comes to all the levels of my identity. And, like, if you notice, like, the body positivity got really, really big in, like, 2020, 2021. It was really huge. And you start seeing different bodies on runways, women in wheelchairs, women with, like, darker skin and vitiligo. Now, if you look at, like, the New York Fashion Week now, recently, it's been, they've gone back to, what do they call it, heroin chic now, almond mom status.
Oh, really?
Yeah, like, in the fashion industry, if for people who know and follow these things, we're going backwards, you know.
Almond mom is in reference to one of the models' mom saying, just eat an almond. Is that right? I heard that story from my kids. I thought it was wild.
It's crazy. And we're literally going backwards. And, like, for people like me who are activists, people who've been activists back in the 80s, it's like a slap in the face. It's like, we've done all this work just for the media to say, yeah, you're not worthy. Again, your body was just a trend for 2020 and 2021 during the riots. Like, we were trying to look good, and now we're going backwards now. We don't want you guys anymore. You guys are too black, too fat, too this. And it's a kick in the balls, honestly.
Yeah. So, I have daughters. I have only daughters and a granddaughter and a wife. I'm surrounded by women. And again, they're the most mysterious creatures on earth. I'll never really understand them. I do try my best, but I can't say that I get it. I don't. Hard. It's just not something I try to get it. I don't totally get it, but I'm okay with that because I'm not stepping on their toes. From the male perspective, I read a study that said you're far more likely to make $1 million, to have $1 million in the bank, than you are to have 6-pack abs. And yet, you know, this is a very guy thing. This is a guy goal. I don't know how many girls want 6-pack abs, but this is like the pinnacle of guy goals with bodies. And yet this is what, you know, we're shown all the time. This was my biggest physical goal, was to have abs, you know, and I worked my ass off to get abs, and I had them. And, like, it was so hard, and it's not a way that you're, like, going to ever live your life, because you have to only focus on this, having these abs, you know, your entire life revolves around having abs. So, like, I get it from that perspective, because it's a really unrealistic goal for guys, unless you're, you know, genetically gifted. It's going to take your entire concentration to get there and maintain that. And it's virtually impossible. Like, even bodybuilders, they probably have abs year round, but they don't have the physique you see on stage year round. And the guys on Instagram who are constantly showing us their abs, and they're the ones we're going, like, yeah, I want to look like that. It's just super unrealistic for most people. Mm-hmm. So I do understand what you're talking about in those terms. From a male perspective, we also have these absurd standards that we're shooting for. I do want to say that I think it's much rougher on women. I think that you guys are scrutinized a lot more than we are.
It's a tricky
thing. I don't know what it's like to be a girl, but I do see how rough it is on my kids.
Yeah. And it's just like, I don't want women to feel like they, like, every little thing is going to be, like, picked on. So I know what that feels like. And especially being, like, a plus size model in the industry, I definitely have had some situations on set where I was treated differently than the thinner models, or, you know, othered even by the models sometimes.
Yeah.
And so it's just not, I always tell people, like, they're like, oh, you're a plus size model, that's so cool. And I'm like, if you only knew how many times I've cried in the bathroom because the thinner models were, like, treating me like I wasn't shit, or the staff would, like, push me to the side to make way for the thinner girls, or them even having a lot of clothes options and me having, you know, like, a little couple items on the rack that are not even cute. It's, every time I turn around, it is something that I have to face. And I think people have to understand that and have sympathy and empathy for other people who are marginalized, because it's not just like, oh, people are complaining, or, like, you know, pull yourself up by the bootstrap. We always hear that stupid ass term that I cannot stand. Like, I loathe that term because I've heard it so many times. I'm like, you just don't get it. Like, if it doesn't affect you, then it doesn't happen, right? But that's just not how the world works. Like, things affect people in different ways. And you have to be open to that and be like, you know what? Let me sit here and listen. Like, I haven't been fat shamed or body shamed, but let me listen to this story because this is a legitimate concern for you. And how can we help change that? Some people just rather be ridiculous and close-minded and not have sympathy for others.
Yeah. Yeah. The thing that is very confusing for me about fashion is I'm not particularly attracted to that body type, the very, very thin girls. I always thought that kind of looked sickly, but I rationalize these things in my head, you know, like airplane seats. They've never been comfortable. They're not comfortable now. I've lost a lot of weight. They're still not comfortable. I don't have to buy two seats. That's a relief. Okay. But like in my mind, I'm going like, well, they're averaging out body sizes. They're going, what's the smallest seat we can put the largest number of people in? And that's what they do. And they have to make money. And so I'm rationalizing it that way. In fashion, I don't walk around and see all that many people who look like those models. In fact, it's like very rare to see people who look like that. Why is that the standard that they're selling clothes with?
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Ever Googled your own name? Prepare for a shock because your personal info, including addresses and phone numbers, is out there, especially with the recent hacks at some big phone and healthcare companies. But here's where Aura steps in. Aura scans the dark web for your sensitive information and sends real-time alerts. Aura also actively requests that your information be removed from data broker sites, putting you back in control. Aura provides you with a complete online safety toolkit, credit and transaction monitoring, a secure password manager, a privacy-enhancing VPN, and more. Try Aura risk-free with a 14-day trial at aura.com/safety. That's aura.com/safety. Rest easy with Aura. Visit aura.com/safety today.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So, Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel, a pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us?
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Yeah, I mean, we've had this conversation many a times with like designers and plus models and mid-sized models, super plus. We've had this conversation. And what it comes down to is, I think, who said it? I think it might have been, he got canceled. There's a lot of fashion people get canceled because they say ridiculous things. But I think it was a guy who was over Victoria's Secret. He made a comment about trans models and also fat models. And he said that they're selling a fantasy. That's what they're selling. And so people are also going off of self-hate, right? Like in the plus size model industry, for instance, I asked one of like the CEOs, you only use a certain kind of plus size model. Usually they have, you know, no chin. They look basically like small people parading as fat people. They're small, but you're saying they're plus size. Like, why don't you use like a, you know, size 22 model? And they were like, when we post that size 22 model, none of the plus size shoppers will buy those clothes. When we post it on a smaller girl, it sells out. And so that's self-hate right there. Right. And it's just like, well, I don't want to see my own self. Like, I want to see what I could be.
Right.
So all these industries are playing off this fantasy, this dream of like the 5% of how people look. Right. It's like you said, these people are like very far and wide. There's not normal models just walking around the streets. Like sometimes you'll see one, but that's not normal. And so people are playing off that fact. Like self-hatred is so real. And so I think ingrained in a lot of these communities and a lot of these workplaces and a lot of families that we don't even want to see ourselves win or anyone who looks like us win.
Yeah.
And so when I see people, I call it fat on fat crime. When I see other fat people dissing other fat people, it is the most infuriating thing ever. And I see it a lot in this industry. This is like, ma'am, we all are in this together. Fat on fat crime. Ma'am, we are in this together. And how dare you openly attack another fat person? And we're in the same industry, fighting the same fight, and you're attacking them on their body. It is wild to me. Yeah. And so with all that said, it's like, it is so ingrained. Like we want to sell, we want to buy in fantasies.
I think we're very good at lying to yourselves because as you're telling that story, I'm realizing that every article of clothing I've ever bought and put on, I look at in the mirror and I think this doesn't look good. This doesn't look as good as the way I saw it hanging on the mannequin. You know, it was forever before I could go to a department store and buy a suit. I used to have to go to a special store. Now I can go and buy a suit at a department store, and I get home and I put the suit on and I think this doesn't look like it looked on the mannequin. And I'll literally I'll doctor an image in my head, like a Photoshopped image of my face on the mannequin from my memory, and go, okay, now it looks okay. Is that not crazy?
That's wild. See, you have this is like that, but that's your fantasy body, right? Yeah. And we all have that. Like, and another thing that I can't stand is hashtag body goals. Like, you know how they'll pick a celebrity like Tiana Taylor, who has the most amazing abs ever. Her whole body's pretty. I mean, she looks good. I don't know if it's genetics or surgery. I don't know. But her body looks great aesthetically.
But abs on a girl is unbelievably rare.
She has abs. Like, her abs are abbing. And so everyone's like, oh, hashtag body goals. Let me put down the sandwich so I look like Tiana. Like, okay, so you putting down a sandwich is not going to get you anywhere near Tiana Taylor's body. So can we please stop with this fantasy body goals? Like, I have a saying also, because I hate it so much. I am my own body goals. So if I, let's say, start exercising 6 times a week and start lifting weights heavy and, you know, high protein, I want to look like a better version of myself. And however that version looks, I am my own body goals. Like, we have to really start cutting out that fantasy body type. Because the suit looks good on you because you're wearing it.
Right.
Not, you know what I mean? Not because the model has it on. And so we really, like, if people don't get anything else from this podcast session, is that stop it. Like, you are your own body goals. You look great in that outfit because you have it on and because you like it.
And this is very profound, because I think it's very difficult to not do comparisons. This is for me, this is a natural thing. I see a really nice tricep. I want to work on my triceps more and make them like that nice tricep, without realizing I've done a lot of work on my triceps and they're pretty good. You know what I mean? Like, I think that's an interesting first step for me. I am my own body goals. What can I do with my body? And that's I really like that a lot.
Mm-hmm. I try to use it for myself all the time. And I'm just like, I wear something, I'm like, ew, not your stomach poking out. And I'm just like, yeah, okay, your stomach's poking out. But I best believe when I go out in that dress that I was like, oh, I should wear like Spanx or something to flatten my stomach, somebody's going to be like, girl, yes, that dress. Love it on you. Because like, no one's, I think we hyper-focus on things on ourselves that other people don't necessarily see. So we have to also understand too, like, your perception versus other people's perception is not the same. Like, you might be like, oh, my tricep, or oh, this fupa. But the other person's like, oh, great tricep. Oh, love that dress on you. Like, it's just like, you know what I mean? It's wild how people perceive us versus how we perceive ourselves. And I think we're a lot harsher on ourselves than the people around us who love us and enjoy our company and just strangers on the street who might just like how you look, we're a lot harsher on ourselves. And so I also am working on like being more gentle with myself as I would with a friend or with a stranger, you know, because I feel like we're nicer to strangers than we are to ourselves sometimes. And like, that's not okay. That's not right.
Yeah. Yeah. Leah, I love your energy. I love what you're doing. Thank you very much. This has been such a fun conversation for me, and I really appreciate it.
Thank you. I appreciate you as well.
And now for the Q&A.
Today's question comes from Scott.
Hi, Scott.
Scott says, hi, Ethan. I've recently lost about 160 pounds in an effort to get my knee replaced.
Nice.
Yeah. He says, I'm lifting weights and hopefully building muscle. My question is, you lost a lot of weight, but your skin looks fairly tight still. How long did it take for your skin to come back after weight loss? Did you do anything to help it besides build muscle to fill it in?
Well, Scott, what a can of worms you have opened. Well, let me say this first. Thank you so much for saying that my skin looks fairly tight. That is such a nice compliment. My own perception of my skin is not that it's fairly tight. It's that it's very loose and saggy. And yes, I had two big surgeries to remove skin. There's one or two pictures of me with my shirt off on my own Instagram or floating around the internet. And if you look very closely, you can see scars that are just evidence of having skin removed. Skin is an organ. Once it grows very, very large, the determining factors on it being either elastically stretched or actually grown to a new point from which it can be elastically stretched are largely determined by genetics. And also the time under tension is a factor here. You know, some pregnant women can stretch out their abdomens very, very large, have their kid, lose whatever excess baby weight they put on very, very quick, and their skin was only stretched. It did not grow large. And then some women get pregnant and take a little bit more time in getting rid of the baby weight and will have saggy skin in their abdomen. This is the same kind of principles of being overweight. If you're very overweight for a very long time, chances are you're going to have loose and saggy skin. The only thing that will mitigate that is surgery. There's no lotions or minerals or types of diet that are going to reduce the actual skin size. Skin is an organ. Once it has grown large, you have to cut it off to make it smaller. Building muscle helps a little bit, but like, if you think about how dense muscle tissue is compared to fat tissue, the amount of muscle you would have to put on to fill up all the loose skin would actually weigh quite a bit more than the fat. So like you lost 160 pounds, you're going to have to put on, you know, 260 to fill that skin because it's smaller. The muscle is smaller than fat. So that's not a great strategy because putting on that much weight at all is going to be unhealthy. So yeah, I have tons of loose skin. I try to hide it as much as I can because I don't like it. I've had some cut off, which was brutal. I've done podcast episodes about this and made posts about it on Instagram. But loose skin is a real thing.
Yeah, makes total sense. Yeah, I could send Scott actually those podcasts where you talked about it because it's you go so in depth and you know get so specific on that. So. Okay. Well, Scott, congratulations on your weight loss. And thank you so much for the question. If anyone else has a question for Ethan, you know you do. Send it to us at AmericanGlutton.net.
Thanks for listening to this episode of American Glutton. I'm Ethan Suplee.
You can follow us on Instagram at American Glutton Podcast. Sincerely.